podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, May 3rd, 2020. This is episode 1692. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of the Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Worldwide Technology. Worldwide Technology's Advanced Technology Center is like no other testing and research lab, with more than $500 million worth of equipment, including OEMs like Dell EMC. And it's virtual, so that means you can access it 24/7. To learn more and get insights into all the ATC offers, go to wwt.com/twit. Why, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, fidget spinners, smart watches, smartphones. One of these things doesn't fit. Oh, yeah, fidget spinners. Forget it. We're not going to talk about those. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number. If you have a question or you want to talk or you want to make a comment or a suggestion, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can still reach me, absolutely. All you got to do is use Skype out. Love to hear from people all over the world. 888-827-5536. There is a website so that you don't have to remember or memorize or write down anything you hear on the show, because that's what James is doing. James DeRuvo is writing it all down so you don't have to. And all you have to do is go to the website, techguylabs.com. That's free. There's no sign up. Techguylabs.com. We'll put everything up there. And there's even audio and video from the shows past. All 1,600 and some. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of shows. 1,600 and something shows. Holy cow. Let's see. What else should you know? Oh, there's a chat room. You know, I mention this a lot these days because sometimes I think we're at home alone, maybe looking for some companionship, and the chat room is full of geeks 24/7. It's full of geeks. All you have to do is go to irc.twit.tv. You could do that in your browser. You don't need a special anything for it. Nothing special needed. Just go to twit live. Sorry, chat. No, that's all wrong. Let me start over. Rewind. irc.twit.tv. irc.twit.tv. I have in my hands, thanks to one of our sponsors, Mint Mobile, a iPhone SE. Cutest little thing you ever, just the cutest little phone you ever saw. Just adorbs. It's the same size, I'm told, I don't even remember this, as the iPhone 8, not plus, just 8, 4.7 inches. It's kind of funny to see bezels again. You know, the modern phones, they have notches. They don't have bezels. They have, modern phones have, you know, they don't have frames. But this thing has a big, they call it a chin, where the fingerprint reader is. You know, little did we know how useful a fingerprint reader would be these days. Because you can't, the face recognition does not work with a mask on. Does not work. So a fingerprint reader is kind of appreciated. You know, it just unlocks. Until we have to start wearing gloves, maybe that's going to be next. I don't know. I like the fingerprint reader. It only has one lens. Oh, no. Remember in the old days with phones only had one camera? How did we live? How did we survive? What a primitive era that was. The new iPhone has three. iPhone Pro Max, 11 Pro Max. I've seen phones with four, five. I can't even count them. They're starting to look like those multifaceted fly eyes you see, right? With all the little cameras and then the big bump. This has a little camera bump and one little lens, but actually gets pretty good pictures because the interesting thing about the SD is inside this old-fashioned exterior. It's kind of like, you know, sometimes people take classic cars, you know, a 1932 Duesenberg, and then they put a Ford GT engine from inside. It's kind of like that. This is a Duesenberg body with the latest Apple chip in it, the same chip that's in the iPhone 11. So I guess that's good. It means what it really means, and the reason they do this is so that you can keep using this phone for longer because it will continue to support the new operating systems, the new versions of iOS as they keep coming out. So that's a good thing. As Martha Stewart would say, it's a good thing. It's also fast, although, and I'm curious because I don't ever notice that a phone is slow, right? Certainly not any iPhone I've used. Have you felt like your phone, oh, it's so slow? I remember when computers were slow, but even then, they're not that slow. Do you feel like your phone, you have a, sometimes Android phones, especially as they get older, they feel slower and slower. But I've never had that problem. Anyway, this is not slow. It's really fast. The screen's not great. It reminds me, you know, nowadays Apple with its top-of-the-line phones anyways using OLED screens, which are really good-looking. The black level's really rich. It looks a little, frankly, the iPhone SE looks a little washed out. Just a little washed out. Now, the thing that is really good about this is the price. The price is absolutely right. It's what a phone should cost, $400. You can get, you know, this is the 64 gig version, but you can get more storage, but I don't think you need to. 64 is a starting point, and that's fine. It's got an aluminum edge, unlike, I think the iPhone 8, I don't think it did. I don't remember what it had. It's been so long. But it's, you know, it's probably what most people want in a phone. It feels good in the hand. You can use it with one finger. You know, you just hold it in your hand and use it with your thumb. It's pretty, pretty. Comes in white, black, and product red, which goes to benefit COVID-19 relief. So $400, I think, you know, this is the phone I would say for most people. If you're going to get an iPhone, and I think an iPhone is the way to go these days, honestly, this is probably the one to get. Save yourself $600. Get an iPhone SE. Pretty impressive. It's cute. It has a bug's ear. It's just cute. Cutest little thing. It's adorbs. When's the last time you were able to say that about a phone? Now mostly you say, wow, that's big, isn't it? Do you want big phones? I mean, I think the mistake is to call them phones. They're not phones. I know a lot of people still use your cell phone, your smartphone, to make phone calls. But watch the youngs. The youngs don't. The utes, they're not making phone calls very much. They're texting. They're messaging. Not even texting. They're snapping, Snapchatting. And, you know, they're messaging each other over the, you know, screen. They're using it as a computer. They're using it to surf the web, to watch videos. So, of course, if that's what it is, a bigger screen is better, as long as you can put it in your pocket. I know they're getting right to the edge. I think we're as big as we're going to get. It fits in my pockets, but I'm a big guy. I have Captain Kangaroo pockets on my jackets and stuff, so I can carry my phones. Even my shirt front, I can carry my big iPhone 11 Pro Max right there in the shirt pocket. But I know there are a lot of people, especially women, who can't and don't want a giant phone like that. Maybe they have smaller hands, too. I have pretty, for a man, I have very small hands. Ladylike hands. And I don't, you know, I think a big phone because I want a big screen. Because it's not a phone, it's a computer. But if you still think of it as a phone, then that screen is wasted. If mostly what you do is make phone calls, that's wasted. You should look at the SE. That's a phone. That's a phone. But they're, you know, it's funny because Apple really, except for that, doesn't sell small phones. And Apple, I think, well, I don't know. Is Apple market-driven or are they vision-driven? You never know with Apple. They pretend they're not market-driven. Oh, in fact, for years, Steve Jobs said, we don't do focus groups. I don't want to know what people think. I tell them what to think. That's very Steve Jobs, isn't it? I tell them what to think. I don't let them tell me. Apple's always taken pride in. We do what's best, and we think customers want that. We think customers want us to tell them what they want. Other phone manufacturers and technology manufacturers, maybe not so arrogant. I wonder even if Apple still is. I bet you Apple, they pretend, you know, oh, no, no, we have a design vision. And honestly, you know, when they took the headphone jack out, I don't think users were saying, oh, please get rid of that headphone jack. I don't want to use my inexpensive earbuds anymore. I want to buy Bluetooth wireless buds with batteries that die and cost twice as much, 10 times as much. Actually, yeah, really. I mean, because you can go, if you lose your wired headphones, you can go to any gas station, used to be anyway, any gas station, and for $5 you could buy, you know, an equivalent. The cheapest Bluetooth I've seen is 30 times that. 30 times more expensive. Maybe that's why Apple took the headphone jack out. Maybe it wasn't design. Maybe it wasn't listening to the users. Maybe it was just listening to the accountants. You know, if we just took the headphone jack out, you could really charge a lot of money for your headphones. And they do. $250 for the AirPod Pro. 250 schmackaroos. That's almost as much as the iPhone SE. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. I'd love to hear from you if you want to talk high tech. That's what I'm here for, you know. 888-827-5536. Kim Schaffer is here. She is anxious, ready, willing, and able to talk to you about whatever is going on in your life, and to put you on the air, to groom you for your appearance on national radio.
The females are strong as heck. As heck. It's a miracle. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you our phone angel, the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. Why? Kimmy don't take no Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
You now have your very own sourdough starter.
So excited.
It's just a little guy, but it will grow.
If I can find flour,
it
will
grow.
It's a baby.
Oh, yeah. Flour is important. That's, you have to feed it at least once a day. If you don't feed it, it just kind of goes quiet. You could put it in the freezer if you aren't going to feed it.
So that'll give it a nap.
It takes a nap in the freezer.
Yeah.
And then you just thaw it out and it'll start growing again.
Awesome.
It's the miracle of nature.
Yeah.
Your very own little yeasties.
I don't think I've ever made sourdough before, so I'm excited.
Well, like I said, I don't make bread anymore. In fact, I shouldn't do anything. In fact, I should just have given you the whole thing. I don't make bread anymore. But when you make sourdough, there's always extra every day because you're putting more flour and water in, and so the jar will overflow. So you take what they call the discard, the extra, and it makes the best crumpets ever. I'll give you the recipe.
I suppose you could make beer with it, too.
You could do, well, that's how, yes, it's the magic of fermentation. Go ahead, take a whiff. Have you sniffed it yet?
I haven't.
Oh, this will be interesting. It's quite tangy.
Woo!
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's been going since January.
Wow.
Yep. So, Kim, enough bake talk. This isn't,
well,
I'm
it's
not the
funny.
Bake guy.
Some guy called and I said, what do you want to talk about? And he said, applesauce. And I went, what?
Applesauce? I do like applesauce.
He mixed Apple and Microsoft and came
applesauce.
Up with applesauce. And that was my laugh
applesauce.
For the morning.
Is the applesauce guy on?
Well, he is, but he's not first.
Who's first?
First is Jason in Henrico, Virginia.
Henrico, Virginia. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Jason. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Thank you very much for the essential service you provide to all of us.
Yes. I am not doing anything risky, though. I wear a mask when I come in the studio. There's just Kim is two doors down. I'm on my sealed booth. No one's allowed in here. And, boy, you can tell because it's getting a little dusty.
I think that even you probably don't realize how important the service and information that you provide to all of us is between this show and your network with all your great hosts.
Oh, thank you. Our podcast network at twit.tv. Yeah. We did a funny thing. I don't know if you saw it on Friday. We had a cook-off, like one of those cooking competitions they used to do.
I missed that.
Reality TV. I recused myself. I didn't want the pressure, but our hosts competed. They were given three mystery ingredients, one of which was snails.
and they had to make a dish. It was pretty funny. It's on our feed, twit.tv, or youtube.com/twit. You can see it. What can I do for you today, Mr. Jason?
Yes, sir. The story is this. My nephew and his wife live in Australia, and they are going to have their first baby in about a month here, less than a month, actually. And they want to get my mom a Facebook portal.
Yes, good idea. So she could see the grandchild. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Facebook.
Me neither.
Their lack of interest in people's privacy or personal data, all that other stuff. Now, as a side note, they all do have access to iOS devices and FaceTime, but they get frustrated because I guess angle.
Let me point something out. Are they all on Facebook?
I think so.
Yeah. So they're already giving Mark Zuckerberg everything he wants.
Valid.
So having a Facebook portal will make them no more of a victim. I guess, you know, you're giving Mark a camera and microphone in the house, but even Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, isn't so information greedy that he's like analyzing the picture and saying, they need a new stove. We should give them some stove advertising. They're not doing that. So the night I had a portal, they're quite easy to use. There's three different models. There's the new model, which I really like, goes right on top of the TV. And for grandma, that might be the easiest.
That's what they want to get her.
Yeah. So it goes on the TV, plugs into the TV. I think it's pretty simple to set up. I don't think your mom will have too much difficulty.
She's pretty tech savvy.
What's cool about it is it's super easy to make these calls now. It's as easy as FaceTime because if you're Facebook friends, which obviously they are, you just say the name or you click on it and you're done. And it's very fast. It does one thing it does that other devices don't, including FaceTime, is it zooms in on the speaker. And if you move around, as babies are wont to do, it will follow.
Sure.
So I think there's a lot to be said for the portal. I think the technology is very good. And just remember, you're not giving them anything they don't already have.
That's fair, yeah. Do you think Apple's coming to missing the boat here?
Yes!
Seems to me like they should be doing. Yes. She has an Apple TV, and I'm thinking, hey, it'd be great to have a camera that could just...
There have been a lot of calls for Apple to do this, but, you know, it takes... These things don't just pop out. It takes years to design them. One hopes Apple's been working on it, but, there's been no sign, no rumors, nothing. You're right. This would be a great FaceTime device, and most of us trust Apple a little more than we do Facebook. But since they're already on Facebook, get the portal. I think they'll love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it seems to be a good little device, Jason.
I just wanted to get your input. I knew you had one, and I knew you kind of got rid of it and stuff, but I know how you feel.
Ironically, I wasn't on Facebook, so I really could barely use it. You can't really use it without a Facebook account.
Gotcha.
And I was thinking of sending one to my mom, but that would have required going on Facebook. Now, ironically, I'm back on Facebook because during this, quarantine, it's the only way I can kind of find out who's doing all right and who's not.
Sure.
So for $150, the Portal TV sits right on the top of the TV, has a good microphone. I think she'll love, there's some features like the story time feature where she can read to them.
Okay.
I think, well, of course, the baby's too young for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's coming.
I think she'll read to my nephew, yeah.
Yeah. And truthfully, I should be, to be fair, you don't have to be a Facebook user proper. You have to either have Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp.
Okay.
But either way, that's what I got rid of, all of that stuff, and Instagram too, because I just didn't want... It wasn't so much I didn't want to give them information. They already probably have it all. I just didn't want to participate in their ecosystem.
Yeah, and I'm very technology savvy, and that kind of thing, and I do a lot with it, but I've never once had a Facebook page and never will.
Yeah, and rightly so. And honestly, once I set it up, I got queasy, and I went on there, and I thought, oh, this is why I left. This is awful.
Yeah.
But there are people, kind of my extended colleagues, people from Tech TV and stuff, that there's no way that I can keep up with them without Facebook. That's the only place they're putting stuff.
Sure.
So.
And not to take any more, much more of your time, do you have a preference or a suggestion on, I want to get my mom to start viewing a lot of your content that you guys produce on her Apple TV? and she just retired Friday, so she's going to have time.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Is there a preference on which app she should put on
Apple TV? Yeah, we don't do an app. I don't remember which are the best Apple TV apps for us. There was one called My Twit that used the API. I thought it was quite good. I don't know if it's still up to date. That was the best one, I think, in the Apple TV.
I wonder if this would be a good Ask the Tech Guy show.
Oh, thank you. Good idea, Jason. Jason from Virginia writes.
Yes, sir.
Good. Deal. I will. That's a great idea. Let me write that down so I don't forget.
I had thought about writing in, but I figured since I had you on the phone, I'd throw
that
out.
Yeah, no, this is good.
There's a bunch of shows I see, and I'm like, hey, this would be good. My mom would enjoy this. She's got, you know, I bought her the Mac years ago. She has an iPhone. She has a watch. She has AirPods. She has, you know, Apple TV, Sonos. I bought her, so she's very.
Is she happy to be retiring, or is it kind of a forced retirement because of COVID?
She's very happy. She initially was going to do it a little later, and then stuff started getting real annoying at work. So she was like,
"If you've saved enough, why not?" Right?
Yeah, and she's 73, so she's put in her time.
It's time. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Wonderful, Jason. So nice to meet you. Thank you for the very kind words. I appreciate
it. Thank you, sir.
Have a great one.
Appreciate all your time.
Stay in touch. Thanks. It's time once again for our car guy. He doesn't low ride. He high rides. No, you're riding a Miata. You're low riding.
Definitely a low rider. Although this week I have been riding a little higher in the new Jeep Gladiator Mojave.
Ooh. This is Sam Abul-Samad. He is a principal researcher at Guidehouse Insights. Podcaster, too, does a great car podcast called Wheel Bearings. You can find that at wheelbearings.media. Joins us every week to talk about automotive technology. He is in the Motor City, after all. So how do you like that Jeep?
I actually like it a lot. The Gladiator, for those that aren't familiar with it, is basically a pickup truck version of the Wrangler. Oh. So, you know, the classic Jeeps that we've had, you know, since the Second World War, they put a pickup truck bed on it in the back. And Jeep's done this several times in the past. But it's been like the last one, which was called the Scrambler, was in the 1980s. And they've been teasing the Gladiator for a long time. They finally launched it last year. And now they have at the very last press conference I went to in an auto show this year was at the Chicago Auto Show. It was for the Gladiator Mojave, which is their off-road high-performance version. It's designed more for desert running rather than rock crawling. So it's more of a competitor for the Ford F-150 Raptor. And it's really good.
Sounds like fun. You sound like you're scary driving down the street. Now, a couple of months ago, we talked about Sonos, the IoT speakers that had obsoleted their older speakers, bricked them. Then a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Owl, the camera that I thought was a great dashboard camera that took pictures of in front, but also of everybody in the cabin. They shut down. Now, this week, another shutdown of an IoT device, one that used to be an advertiser, one I used for a long time, and I see it's behind you, the Automatic. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Automatic was a company that popped up, I think, 6 or 7 years ago, doing a little OBD2 adapter, which we've previously talked about. So this is a device it's a dongle that plugs into the diagnostic port that's underneath the steering wheel on every car built since 1996. And the original version used, I think it was Bluetooth or maybe it was Wi-Fi to connect with an app on your smartphone. Eventually, they created an upgraded version that added an LTE radio to the dongle. So now you can do things. You can communicate with your car remotely, check, how much gas do I have in it, things like that, and get vehicle health reports. And it's a lot of the same kind of stuff that you can get, if you have one of the factory built-in telematics systems like Chevy or GM OnStar or Ford's Ford Pass and, pretty much and Hyundai's BlueLink. Everybody's got one of these telematics systems for connected vehicles. But if you don't have that system in your car, you can use one of these. And unfortunately, because of the current economic situation that's going on because of the pandemic, Automatic has had to shut down. They put out an announcement on Friday, and somebody pinged me on Twitter on Friday night saying, hey, I've got an Automatic, and what should I do as an alternative?
Throw it out. Well, the interesting thing is they had just been purchased by SiriusXM for $100 million. I find, and they're claiming that, well, nobody's driving anymore. I mean, it's only been a couple, 6 weeks or 2 months at best, and we're out of business. We can't do it anymore. I kind of wonder.
Yeah, you know,
I think more to this story than meets the eye.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, it makes it convenient to do that.
I think we're going to see a lot of these.
Yeah, I think.
Because they'll be writing it off.
Any company doing a system, a device like this, you know, it's going to be term limited because, you know, we're getting to the point where in the next year or so, 100% of new vehicles built are going to have this capability built in. So you won't need a dongle anymore.
Okay.
It's only older vehicles that would need it.
So the OBD2 port, the onboard diagnostic port, is on all cars built since, what, 96 or something?
Yeah. And it's a standard port, and there's standard communication protocol.
And I have purchased in the past a variety of dongles besides automatic that will plug into there. They have an app on your phone, and you don't need a server. You don't need the company to stay in business. It just ties to your phone. Automatic's conceit, which was kind of like Owl and kind of like Sonos, was, oh, we'll run servers. That way we'll get a lot of information, which we can sell, hint, hint. And but then when they go out of business, these things become bricks because without the server, they don't do anything. But there are plenty of other, if you wanted OBD2 devices, there are plenty of other devices that will work with apps on your phone, right?
Yeah. So, you know, what you mentioned, you know, the basic adapters you can get, those are great. If all you want to do is, you know, do things like check, you know, if your check engine light comes on, you want to check for fault codes or reset them.
Yeah, what
you can
they
do
mean.
That.
Yeah. How, you could also tell you what your mileage is. The thing that Automatic did, and I wonder if these other less expensive devices can do, is they would snoop and report on your teenager.
The basic ones that are, you know, $10 to $20, they won't do that.
Yeah.
But you know, if you want something, you know, if you have an older vehicle and you want something like the automatic to replace that, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile all have devices that are basically the same as this, you know, same type of device with similar services. Verizon's is called Hum. T-Mobile is SyncUp Drive. And AT&T's device is called Spark. The dongle usually is about $40 to $60, depending on the capability. And then it's typically about $10. The plans start at $10 a month. And you had to pay for a service plan with Automatic as well. But it's about $10 a month with the mobile carriers.
Right.
But one of the advantages that they offer is the dongle also has a Wi-Fi hotspot built in. So if you're going on a road trip, you want to give your kids Wi-Fi access while you're on the road, you can provide it. You have a rolling hotspot with
because it has LTE. You're buying it from a carrier, so they put LTE in it. But you said that most cars now have this built in.
Yeah, most new cars have LTE data modems built into them, and the manufacturers offer similar, you know, plans. And in fact, you know, a lot of the stuff, things like the vehicle health reports that you would have to pay for a service plan with one of these devices, in most cases, that's actually included free of charge. They bundle the cost of that because it uses so little actual data that they bundle that in with the price of the car. So usually you get about 5 years of those basic services for free. So if you're in a crash and your airbags go off, it'll call 911 for you automatically. Vehicle health reports and things like unlocking and locking the doors remotely. If you forgot to lock your car, you can do it with an app.
I use the automatic for a couple other things. If you had business mileage, it made it easy to keep track of that. The app did. And it used to give me a report on how well I was driving, how many hard brakes, how many excessive accelerations I had.
Yeah, doing a little coaching for
it. It would score you. And I thought that was kind of cool.
And these other services will do similar things as well. Yeah.
So really, the problem for automatic was they were obsoleted by modern vehicles, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's still, you know, a market, but it's a gradually shrinking market, you know, and it's just not as big. It's not an indeterminate or it's not a permanent market for what they're selling.
By the way, with that white T-shirt and your white background, Sam, you look like you're coming to us from the good place. I just want to – are you in heaven now?
No, not quite.
Automotive.
Just my basement.
Automotive heaven. Yeah, and it, you know, it's just a reminder when you buy these devices that phone home, it requires that there be a home to phone into, and there's no guarantee these companies will stay in business. And we've seen some pretty high profile companies, you know, either like Sonos turn off the old school stuff, or like Automatic and Owl just disappear. And that's kind of too bad.
Well, and even the automakers, you know, at times, you know, GM has had to obsolete some of the early versions of OnStar as this we've gone from original analog cell networks to TSM and others.
This is what happens. Yeah. Sam Abul-Samad, wheelbearings.media for his podcast. He's a principal researcher at Guidehouse Insights and our car guy. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Leo.
Well. It's so funny. It's exactly what I wanted to ask you about. I gotta remember. Automatic. Yeah. Yep. I like the Automatic.
You know, it wasn't a very expensive device. You know, it was like $100, I think.
Right.
So it wasn't too bad.
I stopped using it because I got a Tesla and it didn't have an OBD2 port.
I think EVs can get an pure battery electric vehicles can get an exemption from that because part of the reason why the OBD2 port was there was to enable emissions testing.
Right.
And if there's no emissions, then you don't need
tests. Yeah. And certainly Tesla reported that all that information and a whole lot more back to the home office.
Right.
So Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Get outside and get some sun. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Joey on the line from San Diego. Hi, Joey.
Hey, Leo. How you doing, bro?
How's your applesauce?
How's mine? Yes, sir. I hope that don't stick, man.
I'm going to call you applesauce from now on. No, I won't do it. I promise, Joey.
Hey, you call me anything.
Just not late for dinner.
Hey, I'd like to back up with that one call that said earlier about the services and stuff you provide, man. I think you should be given like a Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, please.
Man, because
We're just all hanging together.
How much would a tech company charge, you know, for the information you give us, man? It's amazing, dude.
I try. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's very nice. You know, I would do it anyway, but because I just like doing this. But it's nice to know that it's appreciated. Thank you, Joey.
You know what, Leo? That brings me into a question. Would you ever consider doing like a convention of some type for all the people that you cooked up with? You know, because you were huge on tech.
In the past, I have. You know, I always wanted to do. I used to do these geek cruises that were so much fun, and I always thought it'd be fun to do a Twit cruise. But then it's kind of a pricey thing. I don't want to leave people out, so I don't know. I've thought about it.
You'll do that Mac cruise.
Yeah, we used to do the Mac Mania cruise.
Don't do that no more, though, huh?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I did those for about 10 years, did a lot of cruising. But it's expensive, and I think so that's kind of a negative on that one. We do, you know, whenever I'm in a town, we were in St. Louis. That was probably the last trip for some time. We had a meetup in St. Louis at a little club there, and so that was fun. So whenever I go to a town, I try to have a meetup. I don't think those are going to happen for some time. Even when we did that, it was March 2nd. I was very nervous. And nobody shook hands. There was a little bit of hugging. but trying to be good. I should have worn a mask. I feel like, well, we lucked out. But I wouldn't do it now. Wouldn't do it now. So maybe we'll just have a online convention. That's kind of what the podcast network is.
No. We got to see Leo. We got to touch Leo. Well,
no, please don't touch me. Yeah, no touch.
Exactly.
That's why I like the radio. We can talk, we can converse, we can hobnob completely safely.
I think this is
going to be a good thing for a podcast and radio, isn't it? I think we're going to spend a lot of time. We're going to look for information and we're going to look for companionship. And now it's coming through the
Leo,
Amazon Echo or the radio or, yeah.
I've been thinking, Leo, I mean, this could be a lot of positives come out of it, you know?
Well, it's going to change the world, that's for sure. It already has, you know. So what can I do for you, Joey? You wanted to ask about Apple and Microsoft.
Leo, I was watching a documentary, and it was an Apple documentary, and There are people on there saying that, you know, Microsoft, you know, has never done anything for Apple. And, you know, they were saying that, you know, Apple was such a much better company. And but I would like to take you down memory lane. I think it was 97 when Apple was pretty much out of business.
That's right.
And Microsoft bought like $165 million worth of their shares.
That's right, Joey. You got a good memory.
And but you asked an Apple person today, they're like, you know,
I hate Microsoft.
You know, the company has had so much success that you know they forget where they came from, or they forget the people that helped them in the past. You know,
I'll never forget. It was Macworld Boston, 1997, and Steve Jobs had just come back to Apple. What we didn't know at the time was that Apple was very close to going bankrupt within perhaps weeks or months of running out of money. And
you know, I heard that people were going over getting jobs at Microsoft.
Yeah. And Bill Gates decided, and part of this, remember this, at this time, Microsoft was about to be under prosecution by the Department of Justice over monopolistic practices. So there
really,
was.
Isn't that how they got out of it?
Yeah. I think there's something to be said for, you know, when you say, well, why did Bill Gates give Apple all that money? Well, yeah, it was important to have a good competitor. I'll never forget, though, because they had Bill Gates on a big screen, giant screen, looming over a life-size, in other words, tiny Steve Jobs. And it was not a very – it was not a good look. But it showed you how, I think, desperate Apple was at the time. So, yeah, you could give Microsoft credit for saving Apple. And now the most interesting thing is Microsoft, which for years – hated open source software. All of a sudden, Microsoft's business has changed. It's not about Windows anymore. It's about the cloud. And now Microsoft.
Well, because Apple is dominating them so much.
No, Apple's not dominating. Nobody's dominating. This is what's changed is the operating system you use is much less important than it used to be.
Sure.
Because much of what we do now is through the web, is in the cloud. So Microsoft's changed. Instead of Office and Windows being their primary money makers, Azure, the cloud, is. And Microsoft's attitude now is no longer, they used to say a computer in every office running Microsoft products. That was their mission statement. They actually painted it on the sidewalks up in Redmond of the Microsoft campus. But that's changed. Now they want to be wherever their customers are, which includes iPads, Macintoshes, and even Linux, because in fact they run now Linux on Azure, and they are even putting the Linux kernel, the little heart, the beating heart of Linux, in Microsoft Windows. So I think things have changed dramatically. Microsoft has been smart. They realize desktop operating systems aren't as important. They're not going to be the money makers they used to be because they don't matter anymore. But what matter is the cloud.
They weren't smart about the phone, though.
Well, no, that's an interesting story, too. I agree, Joey. The interesting story about the phone is they made a great product. I think a Windows Phone.
Yeah, but it was way too late.
That's the problem.
Way too late.
Steve Ballmer, who was the CEO of Microsoft at the time, didn't recognize the threat that he laughed at the iPhone. He said, who's going to buy that? It's so expensive. And so he didn't recognize the threat it posed to their business. And they did. It hurts Microsoft not to have a mobile platform. Apple really benefits by having iOS. It's big.
Well, Leo, didn't when Apple first came with their phone, I might be wrong here, Leo, didn't they go to Verizon first?
They did.
Verizon told them there's no market for a cell phone?
Yeah, Verizon turned them down. Actually, go way back to the Motorola Rocker, which was iPod smartphone. An iPod smartphone, and I can't remember, was the Rocker sold by AT&T? I think it was. And it wasn't a big seller, but it was Apple's first foray into cell phones. In 2007, 10 years after Bill Gates loomed over Steve Jobs on the stage at Macworld Expo, 10 years later, Apple introduced the iPhone and really changed the technology world. In many ways, not merely the dominance of the iPhone and mobile, but the manufacturing. If you look at China and say, oh, China's eating our lunch in manufacturing, a lot of that credit for that goes to the iPhone because they built specialized equipment. We wouldn't have quadcopters, drones, if it weren't for the iPhone. A lot of the parts that are in a quadcopter are inexpensive because they're mass-produced in China now, because China learned how to make those when Apple started the iPhone. So Apple in 2007, I hear your iPhone. In 2007, Apple changed the world, but it was, you're right, in 1997 that Microsoft gave Apple a little more time. I remember talking with Steve Jobs about a year or two before that. I think it was 1995. And he was really bitter. He'd been fired from Apple. And he was really bitter. He said, we had a 10-year lead on Microsoft. We had a 10-year lead on Microsoft, and Apple squandered it. When Macintosh came out in 1984, Windows was still a command line, right? There was no Windows. But he said, we squandered it. Microsoft caught up, and he felt by 1995 or 1996, I think when Windows 95 came out, he felt like it's all over for Apple. It almost was. Who would have thought at Microsoft would have saved them? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area, still call. Still call. Just use Skype out, and it won't cost you anything. 888 Ask Leo. Let's go back to the phones. And line three, Jim in Laguna Beach, California. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, Leo, I've been listening to you since, I think, in the early 80s. I think it was called CNET TV.
I was never really on CNET. I worked for CNET before they got into TV. But I was on ZDNet. It was on CNBC. It was something called the Personal Computer Show with Gina Smith. And that was around 92. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it was. But anyway, thanks for all that you've done.
My pleasure.
My pleasure. I have a Theta Z1 360 camera.
Yes.
And I've loaded it with a dual fisheye plugin installed, and it uses something called the dual fisheye plugin remote.
Yeah, well, before we go too much farther, because people are going, what the hell is he talking about? This is from Ricoh. It's a really cool 360-degree camera, and the way it does it is actually quite clever. They have two lenses. It's a little device you can hold in your hand, kind of like the size of a kind of an oversized Pez dispenser. And on the front and the back, there are giant fisheye little globes for fisheye lenses. They're so wide, these fisheye lenses, that they can capture 180 degrees. So from all the way to the left to all the way to the right on that side of the camera. Well, if you've got two of those, each of them getting all the way to the left and all the way to the right on each side, stitch them together, and this is the key, by the way, and you've got a 360-degree image. And it's quite a good – the Z1, you spent a little money on that one. That's their top of the line. It's got quite a good image, a 4K image, and the problem is you need specialized software to look at it. So you can put it on YouTube or you can put it on Facebook, and then people can rotate their phone around. Or if they happen to have VR goggles like the Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive, they could put those on and look at it. That's kind of cool because then they're immersed. I've used these Ricohs on my travels, and it's kind of fun because, for instance, when we were in the Galapagos, shot a 360-degree tour as we walked over an island. And that was kind of cool, a way to go to the Galapagos without actually being there. So you've got this. Have you been using it?
Well, I'm new to it. And what I did is I installed what's called the dual fisheye plugin.
That I'm not familiar with. Is this from Ricoh or is this a third-party product?
It's a third-party product. And what it does is it stacks DNG raw overexposed and underexposed pictures together to give, I guess, more range.
It's called high dynamic range, HDR.
That's exactly. Thank you. And it only uses an Android device to access it remotely. So my question is which do you suggest of the Android tablets?
They're all terrible. Even Google, when it made Android tablet, the Pixel C kind of abandoned it. The only decent Android tablets are as expensive as iPads. They're from Samsung.
So, and you want a good screen because you're going to be photo editing on this thing.
Well, I think I am. Now, knowing about the stacking, which I'm not really quite familiar with yet, but I basically, while I was waiting to hear from you, I noticed that I got an email return from the developer, which I asked the same question.
Oh, nice.
And his, and yeah, very good. And his reply was, it's for Android only, but no need to be powerful at all. It just sends a few commands.
Okay. Yeah, I think he intends it for the phone because, honestly,
right.
Most people using Android are using phones. There are very few Android tablet users out there. The best Android tablets are the Samsung Notes. And it's not just the Notes. They have a variety of very nice Android tablets, but they're as expensive as iPads. They start at around $500. But they have good screens, big screens. Now, remember that Ricoh already offers software for your Theta Z1 for your PC or Mac. So you can run their software and do many of the things these plugins will do. This one looks like you want to particularly do it for HDR. Is that why you want to do it?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So you want it, and I think that, as I remember on my Z1, that the HDR, there's an HDR mode already built into it. So the way HDR, HDR works, as you nailed it, is it takes multiple images at differing exposures. And people can do this manually with any camera. You take it exposed for the brightest object so that that looks normal. Then you take it exposed for the darkest object so that looks normal. And then you take something, the normal shot that balances both. When you stack them, you can either do this manually or it's a lot easier to do with software. The software will look at it and take the parts that are perfectly exposed and merge them together so that even the lightest and the darkest parts of the picture are perfectly exposed. That's a high dynamic range photo. And it's, you know, a perfect example would be taking a picture of a sunset because the sunset itself is extremely bright. The sun is still, even though it's not, it's setting, it's still very, very bright, usually so bright that the land that the sun is setting over is too dark to see. But if you stack these photos, one exposed for the sun, one exposed for the land, you can then get a single photo that has both properly exposed. So that's what this, dual fisheye plug-in does. But as I said, I think Ricoh sells their own that you can use on a desktop. To answer your specific question, I would look at the Samsung Galaxy tabs or the Samsung Note tabs. Those are very good, probably the best Android. They're the last man standing. Acer and Asus and others make Android tablets, but Samsung, I think it does the best of all of them. I just wish they were less expensive. You know, I mean, yeah. He said you don't need a lot of power, so you could, you know, you should actually, as long as you've got a nice conversation going with the guy, say, would it work on an Amazon Fire? Those are Android, but they're adapted Android. But you can, with some effort, get the Google Play Store on there, and you can get any Android app on there. And they're cheap. They're $90. But so it depends on, are you going to use it just for this?
Yeah, it's just for this application. I was using my iOS to do built-in HDR.
And you weren't happy with that?
Oh, no, I was, but the forums all said to get the maximum quality,
right,
is what I'm striving for. You've got to have this thing called the dual fisheye plug-in.
Interesting. I'm going to have to try this. My Z1 is sitting on a charger in my office, unused. The only reason, are you a realtor? Is there a reason that you want these 360s, or are you just playing with it?
Well, I want to market small businesses.
Perfect.
And do panos for them.
Exactly. So there you go.
And then I also want it to have GPS because I want to attach the pano to Google Street View.
Perfect. Yeah. A lot of people are doing that. But we did that in our old studio. We had a service come in with 360 cameras. He shot the whole place, uploaded it to Google Maps so you could take a virtual tour of the business on Google Maps. That's a good little business. I like it. And I think the Z1 would be well suited to that. Certainly a lot less expensive than the predecessors, which were extremely pricey. The other thing you can do, and Dr. Mom's reminding me, that most Chromebooks now, you should ask the developer, can I use this? Is it available on a Chromebook? Because if you can use it on a Chromebook, that would probably be the best way to do it. Chromebooks now support the Android Store, many but not all Android apps.
I see.
So ask him if I could use, say, can I use a Chromebook? Because that would be then a more useful tool. Somebody in the chat room says, I made that too, says, I have both a Samsung tablet and an Asus, and he's very happy with both. ASUS, they might be a little bit less expensive. They make Android tablets as well. And the E models, the Samsung lower-end E models, are a little bit less expensive. Still, though, I consider them fairly pricely. They're the Galaxy Tab S, the Galaxy Tab A. I don't see an E, but maybe there's an E as well, which is less expensive. Those are the class acts. The reason the Android tablets didn't take off is because most Android apps just don't work well in tablet mode. They just look like phone apps. You know, they don't take up the whole screen. But if he says his does, then that would be worth it. What would be very disappointing is if you get a tablet and his app still looks like you're on a phone. Then you've gained nothing.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So maybe continue that conversation since he's good enough to respond to you. That's great. Yeah, the dual fisheye plug-in, I'm looking at it. It's available in the plug-in store for the Theta cameras. So I will give it a try. I think that's a neat idea. Really, a lot of these, really, the design is, you know, you're carrying around the Theta with you, and you're also carrying around a phone, so you can kind of manage these pictures as you're mobile, but then you get back home, and that's where you're going to do the main editing on your computer.
Well, that was my workflow, was just to capture the image, you know, and I like a bigger screen to deal with it. There's a little mini LCD screen on the front of it, but you know.
Oh, I know. You can't use that. I know.
No,
it's intended. I think the Z is intended. All the Ricoh Thetas are intended to be used with a phone paired to the phone, so you can see what you're taking a picture of, if nothing else.
Right. And then my workflow is to bring it back and to use Lightroom and to use their Stitcher.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good. So you are doing it on the desktop. You just want something portable while you're out there in the field shooting.
Right. And maybe I could ask you this. Do you think it's that critical how good the screen is?
No.
Because,
No. No, as long as you're taking a good picture, you're just using it to position the picture. To frame it. And honestly, there's not much framing required because it's 360 degrees, right? That's one thing. It took me a while to figure this out. I don't have to aim the camera.
It's
everywhere.
The monopod around,
Take a little monopod with it, and you put it on the monopod. That's the main reason you want it on the phone, so you can step out of the picture and shoot it. Otherwise, you're in it, but your big head is in it, and you don't really want that. So nobody wants your big head. This is, you know, I have a couple of these 360 degree cameras. I'm enamored of the idea, but I've yet to find a good use for them. I also have the GoPro Fusion, which is a very good 360. It does the same thing. It has two fisheye lenses back and front. I think the Theta Z1 is really a very nice camera, but it's about $1,000, so
I was looking at the Lab Pano, but it was kind of a new camera, and I thought since this had been around for a while that all the applications
this is really good
easier.
Problem is I'll take a picture and then I don't know what to do with it. It's like, well, but see, you've got a good use for it, so I think that's a sensible to spend some money on it and get it right.
Thank you.
Hey, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Well, thanks so much, Leo. I'll take your advice.
Take care.
Appreciate everything.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Have fun. Hey, we'll get back to the Tech Guy Show in just a bit, but first a word from our sponsor. The last trip I made back in March was to St. Louis to see Worldwide Technology and their amazing Advanced Technology Center, and I'm so glad I did. It was mind-boggling. $500 million in enterprise gear. It's set up so that their engineers can do proofs of concept, can test, can configure it so that you can try it. Hundreds of OEMs in there and key partners, too, ranging from heavyweights like Dell EMC. Boy, those Dell EMC drives, they're beautiful, man. I saw them in the racks. To VMware, to Intel, to emerging technologies like Equinix. WWT, Worldwide Technology, is a trusted partner that stays with you through the years. Most of their customers have been with them for more than a decade, because they know that Worldwide Technology is somewhere they can go get the answers they need to make sure they get the right hardware and software for their business. And I think this Advanced Technology Center is truly a differentiator. It is unique. It's an incubator for IT innovation. You can get, for instance, on-demand and schedulable labs like Dell EMC's VxRail,
Data Protection Center, IDPA. These labs represent the newest advances in primary storage, and there are hundreds of labs exploring any technology you might want to use in your business. Multi-cloud, hyper-converged infrastructure, networking, secondary storage, data analytics, even AI and more. You can learn about products before you launch them. That's exactly how WWT's engineers use these environments. I met a few of them in the lab, and that was so cool. They use it to spin up proofs of concept, to do pilots for their customers. And it lets you as a customer confidently choose the right solution. But you know what else is cool? You as a customer can even do your own testing. Because Worldwide Technology offers lab as a service. This is a dedicated lab space within the ATC where customers can perform programmatic testing using all of that $500 million technology ecosystem WWT has assembled. And there's more coming in all the time, all the latest stuff. And because it's virtual, you don't have to go to St. Louis. You can use it anywhere in the world 24/7. WWT has launched this digital platform. They launched it last summer. Perfect timing, too, I got to add. It encompasses the ATC ecosystem. This ever-evolving platform creates a multiplier effect of knowledge, speed, agility, anytime, anywhere around the world for WWT's customers and partners. Get full access to articles, to case studies, of course, those hands-on labs, all the tools you need to make a difference in today's fast-paced world. To learn more about Worldwide Technology, the Advanced Technology Center, and become a member of their growing community, just go to the website wwt.com/twit. Create an account. Get access to the on-demand labs right now. WWT simplifies the complex. That's wwt.com/twit. Worldwide Technology, delivering business and technology outcomes around the world. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Aaron Bismarck, Missouri. Hello, Aaron.
Hello there.
Good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm very well. You staying healthy?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Good man. Yep.
Staying away from people.
Wearing that mask, social distancing, washing your hands, all the same things we did in the 14th century during the plague. I like it. The medical science has really progressed. What can I do for you?
Well, I'll tell you, I work for a church, or with a church, and we've been doing the Facebook Live.
Good. Good.
Like, you know, tons of others. And we've been having real good results. We're using webcams, up to a computer using OBS.
Very nice.
And yeah, it's been real good. But we are currently right in the middle of the sanctuary, right in front of the pulpit, you know, right up there, mm-hmm. where it'd be right in the middle of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so here, probably in about 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to look into moving possibly back into, you know, having people in the sanctuary.
Right.
And so that'll put me back in the back of the building.
Oh, dear.
The back of the room. And
minister will be about this big.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And plus, it's also, you know, it's built in the 50s, dark, you know, wood and brick.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Oh, yeah. It's a inner sanctum, but it's not great for shooting video, is it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I guess I'm looking for suggestions on what kind of a camera. I'm thinking probably like a low end pro type camera, possibly. We don't have tons of money, but we have some that we can spend.
I'll tell you what we've been using. Canon introduced this. And so what you need to do this is a camera that will have live clean HDMI out. That's the term. Live means you turn on the camera just like you're going to take a picture. Even if you're not recording, it sends video out of the HDMI port. Most cameras will have, and that's another thing you need, is a mini HDMI port or an HDMI port of some kind. So you need a camera that will send a picture out. And you want it to be clean, which means none of the stuff you see in the viewfinder, not the aperture and the speed and how many shots are left, any of that. You want a clean picture. So you want clean HDMI, and you want it to be able to come out live. And in some cases, you'll need to figure out a way to power it. What we have been using, Canon just released, and I really, really like it. It's a little point-and-shoot. And it is, John, what's the name of it? Is the H200? I can't remember the name of it. It's a little point and shoot cannon that they've actually specifically said, we think people are going to use this for live streaming with OBS and things like that. M200. Thank you. It's about $400 or $500. It's not cheap, but that's less expensive than a camcorder. It's a nice, it's a very nice camera. Quality is very good. It has a lot of zoom. That's what you need. The problem with any digital camera, of course, is going to be in a dark environment, it's going to get pretty darn grainy. So if you can get some lights in there, I think people will understand if they have some lights. They don't have to light the whole place up. Just light the preacher's face. I would do that. But I'm in love with this M200. Do you have a... Chris Markwart's on the line, too, if you hold on a second, Aaron. Hi, Chris.
Sure.
Do you... What? Now, you're using a DSLR to shoot your
video. No, no. It's a Sony Alpha 5100,
right.
But it's a pretty convoluted setup, so I wouldn't recommend
that. You need a capture card for that. And what we did, Aaron...
Device,
and, yeah. What we did have to do, Aaron, with the M200, everything was good, HDMI out and everything, but we had to buy a dummy battery because it didn't have a power... supply. So you get a dummy battery that goes in the battery case and plugs in, and that way you can power it and it stays on.
There's one thing Canon is doing right now. They have released a beta version of a software that turns their DSLRs into a webcam over USB, but it's beta only. It's on Windows only, and it has some quirks still. So
you have to be running a program on Windows to do it, right?
Yes.
That's
it's only
weird.
For Windows at this
yeah.
point. Yeah.
Could you still use OBS? Are you using Windows, Aaron? Or
yes, yeah, it's Windows.
So I guess OBS would see it as a cam, as a webcam. So that if you have some Canon, any Canon EOS camera, you can this new firmware. But yeah, somebody here is trying to use it and has had some issues with it. So, but that's kind of cool, and I'm sure Canon will upgrade this over time. I'm trying to get on my A7s. I'm trying to do the same thing because I want to set up a little studio in my house, and I have a couple of A7 bodies. Actually, I think I have 3 A7 bodies, but I'm having a hard time getting clean HDMI out. I still see your aperture, your shutter speed, and all that. So that's why I like these M200s. They really, Canon wants you to use these as webcams. At CES, they actually were demoing it. So is that within your budget, Aaron, or is that still too expensive?
No, I think that would be good, and maybe even a little better even.
The quality is spectacular.
Okay.
Because it's an APS-C, so it's a big sensor. It's high def. It has a pretty good zoom. I don't know. Let me see if they say what the zoom is. Actually, it shoots in 4K, too. 24 megapixels. But I don't know what the zoom is, but it's, you know, it's a built-in lens, so it's a built-in zoom.
Right.
But we've had great, it's 15 to 45 millimeter zoom. So on an APS-C, that would be 45 times 1.6, the effective zoom. So that'd be like 90. Probably, you know, if you're way in the back, are you up in the choir?
No, this would probably be, it's our sound booth back, it's probably about 50 foot back.
Yeah, okay, so 90 would be fine, I think, if you're only 50 feet back. That wouldn't be too bad. And that's better, I think, than a camcorder, to be honest. But, I mean, you certainly can get a camcorder. And any camcorder with live HDMI. We use Canon Vixias, that's what I'm on right now. And they're a little more expensive, but not a huge amount. They have a lot more zoom capability, though.
Okay. We were looking at some, you know, even like someone suggested the Canon XA11.
Oh, yeah, if you've got money.
Okay, so that's...
You don't need to go that crazy. Yeah.
Okay.
We're using, I don't know what model number Vixia. I don't even know if they still sell these, John, but I think these are HF... R800, maybe? HF's... G22, okay. So you don't need 4K, probably, right? You don't want to stream 4K,
no.
Aaron, yeah.
No,
so look at the HF G22s. I wonder what... or the G21s. I don't know how much they cost. When we bought them, they were $1,500. Now they're, I think, more like $800. And those are those look more like cameras, you know, and they have better zoom and all that. Hey, I have to run, Aaron, but good job.
Thank you. Keep up the good work.
I'm sure everybody really appreciates it. All right. Take care. It's time for our photo guy. He has recovered. He's looking fit. His skin is clear and pink. His taste is back, but you didn't have COVID. Chris Marquardt.
I don't think I had COVID, no.
That's the problem. No one knows, so you just have to say, well, it didn't have all the symptoms or whatever.
So. It was a throat thing that I have every now and then. So
I'm glad you're feeling better. We missed you.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah. And I should mention that we ran we had a couple of pre-recorded episodes, both of which mentioned you were on your way to Ethiopia.
Well, that's what happened when you pre-record stuff.
Yeah. So you ended up in Ethiopia and you were sent back, right?
Yes, we had to cut the trip short in the middle after the German embassy in Ethiopia told us, get out.
That was on
March the 15th, 16th. Yeah. And then it's no travel since.
So unfortunately, all those great workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com are just for dreaming right now. Because they're all on hold, as everything is in this world. Yeah,
very true. But it gives you time to think and to dig into things and to work on projects that you had for a while. I've had this little project sitting somewhere in hiatus for about a year, but now this whole being at home gave me the kick in the rear end to finally get it off the ground and to start working on it. So over the last month, pretty much, I have come up with something that, or I've finished something that is about the stories behind photos. Because, you know, Leo, photography is about telling stories in pictures, but then the photos themselves often have even more amazing stories behind them. And I realized this when I looked at years ago at Magnum's contact sheets book, where they bring out the contact sheets of famous photographers, of famous photographs, and you see the stories around it, and you realize there is more going on than just the actual photo.
It is one of my favorite things to do. It's almost like looking at it's like listening to the DVD commentary. Yes. Because when you're a pro and you're sending it back to the editor, you have a photo editor, and they'll send back the contact sheet with 30, 40 photos, and they'll cross out and they'll go, this one. They'll circle that one. And that's the one we've all seen.
True.
When you look at the contact sheet, you see the shots before and after. I love that.
So what I've done is I've in secret over the last month brought up this little project. And Leo, if you can open up pickonephoto.com,
okay.
pickonephoto.com, which is a project where I invite photographers. And we talk about photos, but not about like the tech and stuff. We talk about the stories around the photos.
Oh.
So over the last month, I've recorded 7 discussions with 7 different photographers. And what they do is they bring one of their photos. And then I have a page where if you scroll down, you'll see a whole bunch of photos. They pick one photo from that page. And then we discuss the two photos, one of theirs, one of mine. And yeah, it's wonderful because you find out what was going on besides what's in front of the camera. I mean, we're talking about why did the photographer take the photo? What was going on in their mind? What triggered them to press the trigger? What was going on around the photographer? What was going on behind them? Was someone else there? Were they alone? What happened before and after the photo was taken? And knowing these things about photos informs the picture too. It gives you different eyes to look at the picture through. So another thing that happens when you listen to people talk about the stories behind photos is that it takes a lot of the mystery out of photography. You know, you have these photographers who are the masters, and there's only this one picture and that's the best picture, but you don't know that it was a struggle to get the picture. You don't know that they had to take 300 to get this one picture. You don't know that what went wrong, what happened around the photos. And the moment you understand that it's not just someone who is a genius and they pick up the camera and they press the button and they have a masterpiece, a Pulitzer Prize winning masterpiece. The moment you realize that, the whole story changes for you as a photographer. You are going to approach your own photography in a different way as soon as you know these things.
Yeah, and I'm surprised you're getting any photographers to do this, but that really says a lot about them and their confidence, because I think there's some photographers who say, I just want you to see the good one. I don't want you to. My mother, very famously, when she was talking about baking cakes, told me, you only see the cake that made it. You don't see the cakes that didn't make it. And and I think it's brave of these photographers to talk about the cakes that didn't make it. But of course,
you know,
they're
so
accomplished.
So yeah. It's not so hard getting these people. Really isn't as hard as you think, because, I mean, I make it easy for them. They get to choose their own photo, so they know what kind of a story they want to tell about
it. Right.
They get to choose my photo to talk about. So that's a bit of a surprise factor in the show. They're supposed to keep that a secret. So in the show,
fun.
They tell me which of my photos they chose, which adds a bit of a surprise element.
You're such a good photographer when I look at these pictures of yours.
Thank you.
Oh, man, they're good. Oh, man.
Well, you should watch some of those videos, because what they bring is amazing, too. So
this is a new show for you. This is something.
It's a brand new thing.
Chris has done probably the premier photo podcast for years, Tips from the Top Floor, for many years, 15 years.
Yes.
Yeah, as long as I have. And but now you're doing a new show, and you always are doing some fun new things. I think this is a really interesting idea. Pick one photo. Is it YouTube only?
At this point, it's YouTube only. It's on the website. It's not live streamed. It's just a recording.
Right.
And it's really interesting. Gessi Baranek Spirello is is an awesome photographer. John Miller, I've been doing a lot of the photo tours with him. He's a filmmaker.
Yeah, I love
Adrian
him.
Stock
yeah.
and Emer King are my co-hosts on... Oh, and Jeremiah Chechik, they're my co-hosts on The Future of Photography. Sean Galbraith is a photographer from Toronto. Andres Fernandez Cordon is a photographer and animator from Argentina. It's a really very diverse group of people, and this is only the beginning.
How are these? I bet it's easier to get people now because everybody's stuck at home. How are these guys dealing with? How are you dealing with the fact that you can't just really go out and travel around as you used to?
Well, this is a form of travel for me. I mean, I get to talk to different people. It helps me keep my sanity for sure.
Yeah.
There's an exchange. There's networking. It's a whole different level of doing this. And the fact that I have to stay home has kind of forced me to invest more time in this and to get it off the ground. So now this is something that I can do.
Yeah.
So
it's got to be challenging.
I'd love to have you on this one,
no,
too.
No, I'm not a good enough photographer. You stick with the pros.
You certainly have photos and stories to tell about them.
Well, everybody does, right? I mean,
there you go.
Especially since my photos often are travel photos, so there's always a related travel story. I like to do street photography, though. I guess I could do it, but everybody be in masks. It's not quite. Maybe focus on the eyes a little more. I don't know.
Well, get a good looking mask. I just made another one.
Oh, look! Are you using a sewing machine? Or are you doing them by hand?
I'm now turning into a sewing professional.
Me too. I'm enjoying it.
There you go. It doesn't even look bad.
No, it looks great. I cleaned out my home office. Got rid of all the lounging things, you know, the recliners. I'm getting a work table so I can really crank out these
these
masks.
We're all learning new skills.
What pattern are you using for your masks?
That's this is the Foo nice. Mask by freesewing.org, I think.
Oh, I have to check this out. Foo, huh?
The Foo mask.
Yeah, I've been looking at the Olsen mask because it has a nice pocket for the nose. I don't like getting my nose squashed. So the place to go for the photography YouTubes is pickonephoto.com. And, of course, Discover the Top Floor is Chris's home. And we will have an assignment. In fact, when I come back from this break, I'll tell you what the assignment is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a perfect one for my home for COVID-19. My home. I lent my son... He's surfing. I don't know how much surfing he's going to get to do because I think they've closed the beaches now. But he wanted. He said, "I need a really long lens." I said, "Take my Canon 5D Mark IV and all the lenses. I'm not doing anything with them." And so he's going to be, I hope, doing some surf photography.
Sure, why not?
And now I'm just thinking, I'm just going to carry the Leica around and just shoot the cue and just make it simple.
Just not as much wide angle right now because you have to get too close to people.
Oh, that's a good point. I need telephoto too.
Well,
that's a good point. Put a long lens. Put a long lens on my Sony then. Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So it's fun. So you're sewing those? That's so cool.
But Monica, my better half, she is a almost professional sewer. So we have the best of the best equipment in the house. So good tools are fun. Learning a new skill is fun.
Yeah. So one of the things, I just ordered a bunch of silk because one of the things I've recently read is you want to combine materials so you have high thread count cotton and a couple of layers of silk. High thread count is a filter, but the silk is electrostatic, so it stops particles in a different way. And by you could use silk, flannel, or there was a third, chiffon. But you have to use multiple layers of chiffon. But because it's trapped stuff electrostatically, the combination is powerful.
So I'm still using like a couple of layers of jersey in between and
That's what I was doing.
Woven fabric on the outside.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was doing. That's exactly what I was doing. Yeah. In fact, this is my mask.
Would you have thought a year ago that we'd be talking about sewing?
Yeah, exactly. So this one, there's the T-shirt material. Oh, it's nice and soft, and it has a pouch. I got a little filter in there, and then this is the quilting material. Isn't that fun? But these are square, and they're not as... I want to get something a little more fitted like yours. I like what yours looks
like. That's why I did it. Oh, and there's a thing I put in the middle at the nose here, which is a little, it's like glue. It's called sock stop, which is the stuff that keeps your socks from skidding on the ground. It's liquid latex, and it keeps the masks from slipping. So
that's what I need. I've been trying to figure out. I have a bendy in the nose piece, but it doesn't.
And I have the. I have the Velcro in the back, so it ties
really
together
doing
behind the head.
Special. That's really nice.
It took me a while to modify this. I even modified the pattern.
Wow, you're pretty sophisticated. I feel like
I have plenty of time.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. This is why I'm not going to come on your show. You got a pro here. Yeah. Now, if you want to
watch
one
a couple
mask,
of those episodes, if you have a minute,
I can't wait to watch them. I will. Yeah,
you'll see. You'll see that it's not comparing the which is the better photo. It's about the better story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a podcast called "Pick One Mask." You take your mask and you tell us the story behind
it.
All right, Chris. Have a great day. I'm glad you're feeling better. Talk to you
in a week.
All righty. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt's photo assignment still in force. Next week or the week after, he's going to review your shot. So if you want to participate, it's not a competition. It's just an excuse to get out there and take photos. You don't even have to have a fancy camera. You can use your camera phone. And Chris is picking something appropriate for our quarantine this month. The subject matter is my home. My home. So here's how it works. Take a picture. Illustrating the concept, the idea, my home. We're not going to tell you any more than that. It's all up to you, right? Your creativity. Upload that picture to Flickr, flickr.com. Great photo sharing site, really nice photo sharing site. Free to join. You can upload it there and then submit it to the Tech Guy group. You'll know you're in the right place because it's a big picture of me and there's 13,000 members and lots of photos. And our moderator, Renee Silverman, will thank you. The key, though, is to tag it. TG My Home, TG for Tech Guy, My Home. That way we know it's your submission for the photo assignment. And in the next couple of weeks, I don't know if it's next week or the week after, Chris will pick three and talk about them on the air. And that'll be your reward, fame and fortune. So TG My Home. Back to the phones we go. Line one from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hall's on the line. Hello, Hall.
Hey, Leo. Hey, I'm an Apple person, but I bought an iPhone 11 Pro Max last October.
Yeah.
Cost almost $1,400.
Yes.
I couldn't get it set up right. Called Apple, spent a couple hours with them, and it got to working, but it still wasn't exactly right. A few days later, I called them back and told them that, you know, it wouldn't swish when you do an email. So they, you know, spent hours and said it's a software problem, and they can't fix it. Just have to wait for a software fix. So that never came.
What?
So anyway, I noticed another problem.
Man, you spend $1,400 on a phone, and they say, oh, we can't fix it?
Well, let me finish. So in January, I noticed another problem. The Memoji wouldn't speak. So I called them back, spent hours, and, you know, done a lot of updates and everything they say to do. And they keep saying that that's a software problem. Well, a speakerphone also, you might notice this as I'm talking to you. People
pretty muffled. Yeah.
That it echoes or reverberates.
Yep. You have a lemon, and they need to fix that for you because that's ridiculous.
Well, I finally just got fed up, and I said, look, the Apple warranty says warrants the Apple-branded phone against defects in materials and workmanship for a period of 1 year. So I sent that back to them, and they responded, well, no, that doesn't apply. This is software. And
are you talking to the Apple store? Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to the people that – the engineers, the people that they've shifted me through to get to, you know, some result.
These are employees of Apple Incorporated?
Yeah, this is Apple.
No, this is shameful. This is ridiculous. Normally, you'd bring it to the Apple store, and they'd swap it out there and then, and that's exactly what they should do.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, to me, it's not logical to say it's software because...
No. And Apple makes the software. No. Are you sure you're talking to Apple? This is not Apple. This is not Apple's MO at all. Maybe because during COVID, you need to demand a replacement phone or your money back. You spent way too much for a phone that sounds like this, can't work. Now, I presume they've had you, completely reset the phone, right?
Yeah, I've done through everything. You know, I've waited.
It's not software, then. It's hardware.
I mean, that's okay. So if it were just software, all iPhones like this should not work, right?
That's exactly right.
Something's wrong about the hardware software issue. I mean, there's something wrong that the phone is not playing the software rightly.
Yeah. You're called 1-800-APLCARE. Call one. I don't think you're talking to Apple. 1-800-APLCARE. This is not only unethical behavior, I believe it's illegal behavior. You have a non-functioning device for which you spent a lot of money, and they need to give you one that works, period. I'd be furious. And by the way, your software, especially if you wiped it and you started over, the software you're running is the same software I'm running and everybody else who owns a phone. It is not the software. It is the hardware. It's a hardware flaw. You got a bum device. And I can't imagine that Apple is treating you like this. So make sure you didn't Google a number and you're calling some guy and, you know, the local Apple repair shop or something. Call Apple. 1-800-APLCARE. Or call 800-MY-APPLE. I guess that's another one. 800-MY-APPLE. I do not think that is, if it's Apple doing that, then shame on Apple. But it doesn't sound right. Maybe because of COVID, you know, the stores are all closed, except in China, ironically. Those stores are open. But that doesn't sound right. If the Apple stores were open, I'd say you'd have no trouble. You go in, you show it to them. They go, oh, yeah, you got a bum phone. It's not the software, especially if you've redone the phone. You've gone to the settings on the iPhone, you've gone to general, and you've gone to reset right down there at the bottom, erase all contents and settings. And before you install anything else, you try the phone, and if it's still doing that, that's hardware. That's not software. I hope you bought it at an Apple store or from an Apple authorized dealer. If you bought it on eBay, then maybe that's why, you know, you're all bets are off. But if you bought it from Apple, they are required, ethically and I believe legally, to give you a good phone. That phone is non-functioning. You spent way too much money. Wait, that's crazy, man. That's crazy talk. You spent way too money for that much money for that phone. Just your speakerphone alone was I had to turn you off. It was unusable. Myron, Burnsville, Minnesota. Hello, Myron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. It's good to finally talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for hanging on.
I've got a couple, or one comment and one question. The comment is, I actually have the Owl Cam, and mine still works. I'm able to say the OK presto, and it...
That works, but it's not saving it to the cloud anymore.
Well, but I also was able to not press the... live view, but the other, and then I was able to download save a clip, a 1 minute clip anyway.
Yeah. So the local version is working, but according to Owl, they've shut, or maybe they haven't shut it down yet, but they will shut it down if they haven't. Let me go to the Owl Cam website and see, because they kind of went bye-bye, and then a company bought them. And it says, Owl Cam assets were recently acquired, this is from owlcam.com, by Zergo Technologies, a leading provider of industrial IoT technologies to fleets and enterprise partners. Support for consumer Owl Cam subscribers and new Owl Cam purchasers is temporarily suspended. So I'm glad you're getting some satisfaction from it. I think it must only be local recordings. And that's only about half of what you were getting. You certainly don't pay them anymore. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So what can you not? I mean, is there stuff you can't do?
No. I mean, everything seems to be.
That's maybe they
uploading. I'm sitting in the car, doing it. So I guess it is.
Oh yeah. Okay. So you're using Wi-Fi. Drive out of your driveway; it'll stop working immediately.
Well, no. I'm not. When I'm in my car, it's far away from my. My Wi-Fi.
Oh, it's not on Wi-Fi? Your LTE is still working.
Yeah.
Huh. Well.
So, I don't know.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Mine would not. I could not get mine to sync up or anything. I have talked to people who said, well, some of it's still functional because if you're on Wi-Fi. But maybe that LTE is going to continue working. Did you buy it a year at a time? I don't know. I don't know if they have plans to refund or what.
No, I think I'm not sure what I did for a while.
Go ahead.
My other question, I bought a ThinkPad, Lenovo ThinkPad, with the specific purpose of putting Pop OS on it, and I cannot for the life of me get it to work.
Yeah. It will work. I'm sitting in front of a Pop OS ThinkPad right now. So the key generally is you want to turn off secure boot in the BIOS setup.
Okay.
Secure boot is on almost all Windows machines have this. And the idea is to keep you from installing anything but a legit copy of Windows. But you're not. You're installing Linux. So if you go into the setup, and this should have been documented somewhere on the Pop OS site. But you go into the setup, there's usually all that's necessary is you turn off secure boot. And then try it. Are you able to boot up to the stick, the USB stick?
No. It does, but then, let's see, it comes up with two errors. One, something of an invalid signature, and then
yes,
the other one,
that's
says you need to load the kernel first.
Yeah, that's secure boot. So what the secure boot does is it checks the certificate and says, oh, is this a signed copy of Windows? Well, guess what? It's not. So I
boot into Windows and then go into the
on your Lenovo. I'm trying to remember. I think you tap F12 as you're booting up. Right. So shut it all the way down. Tap F12, maybe F2 actually, because you got to get into the BIOS settings. Sometimes it says on the front there what to tap. And when you're in the settings, you browse around, but you'll see it'll say. In fact, Is this a brand new Lenovo? Which Lenovo did you get?
No, it's an older one.
Okay, even better. Older ones will...
T470S.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I'm looking at, T470S. I can give you exactly the settings. So let me restart mine. Because I'm running... And I think you'll love Pop! OS on this, by the way. The T470S with Pop! OS is a fantastic combination.
That's why I bought it.
Yeah. Perfect. I love this thing. So F1 to get into setup. F1... into BIOS setup. And once you're in BIOS setup, I'm doing that right now, you go to the security tab. I'm thinking, yeah. And go down and it says secure boot and disable that.
Okay.
I don't think you have to do anything else. On some devices, I think you can still use UEFI. I disabled the security chip, but that was more for privacy than anything else. That's under security chip, TPM 2.0. I disabled that. I don't think I went in. Maybe I did this just to be safe. Under password, I disabled the supervisor password, disabled lock UEFI BIOS settings. Basically, you're turning off the stuff that says you can only install Windows on this, and that's basically secure boot. I don't think there's anything else you have to turn off. I turned off device guard, and then you know you also have to make sure you make a properly bootable USB key. But I think you have because you were able to get pretty far down the road. So
right, yeah.
So I think it's that's signature, that's secure boot. So I think that's all you have to do. And then once you turn that off, you boot into it. And, you're going to love it. It should install in about 10 minutes. It's very quick.
Cool.
Yep.
I really love it.
My pleasure. Enjoy. I'm always happy to help somebody get running Linux.
All right.
Thanks, Myron. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, Windows, Mac, Linux, whatever's on your mind. If it has to do with tech, that's what I'm here for. 888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Website is techguylabs.com, and everything we talk about is up there on the website, including audio and video of the show after the fact. techguylabs.com. There's a page for every show. So you just go to that page, and then every page is divided up into hours, 1, 2, and 3, and every hour divided up into segments, 1, 2, 3, and 4. So you should be able to dive right down in there. Find whatever you're looking for. This is episode, just for your benefit, 1,692. Bob in Leonia, New Jersey. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Leo. Hello, Leo. You're our savior. I don't know how we get through this whole thing.
Oh, it's awful, isn't it? It's just awful. It's just awful. Who would have thought... After a lifetime of wonderful, normal things, this would happen out of nowhere.
Nobody could predict it. But, you know, as you said, I think it was last week, if it wasn't for the internet, can you imagine?
Whoa.
I don't know how we would.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny because historically there have been many, many of these shelter in places and epidemics and so forth going back to the Middle Ages and even earlier. But people just had to sit there alone and stare at the wall. Now we can stare at Zoom.
Yeah, exactly.
What can I do for you, Bob?
One quick question. Hopefully the other one will be easy also.
Good.
Easy and quick. If you recall, I guess I just heard you speaking to somebody else about the Linux and Pop! OS.
Yes.
If you recall, we spoke, I guess, a couple of weeks ago regarding my trying to upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10,
yeah.
And you suggested that I go think about Linux and Pop! OS, and you told me how easy it was going to be, and I explained to you how...
Are you
going to
yell at me now that it's not easy at all? Go ahead.
It's easy for you. It's not easy.
Yes. Yes.
My question is, when I started to follow the directions that I wrote down, when I went on to System 76 and looked up the Pop OS, it specifically says it'll only run on a 64-bit system, and mine was a 32-bit system. Even your guy who writes all this down wrote it in the notes, because I went back to tech guys to read it to see if I said that. And mine is a HP laptop, but it's a 32-bit system.
What makes you think it's 32-bit?
The information that I got from
tell me what model you got.
I got it 6230. Okay. HP 6230.
Is it really old?
And it's a NC. It's compact. I'm looking at it while I'm talking to you. And compact NC 6230. It's probably 8 or 9 years old.
Okay, it's a compact, huh?
Yeah. SHP on it also, but it's
from the old compact days.
Yes.
You know, most PCs, most Intel processors are actually 64-bit.
Okay.
I think it's probably going to work, but if it doesn't, then I have other Linuxes I could recommend that are designed for older systems. But I think what I would do is just try booting up to one of the nice things about Linux, all Linuxes these days, is if you make a bootable USB key,
mm-hmm.
or CD if it's an older system, and you boot to it without installing it, you can run it. And you can see how it works. If the screen works, if the trackpad works, if the keypad works, if everything looks normal, then it works. And then you can say install it. So they call these, they used to call them live CDs. Now that they're USB keys, I don't know what they call them, but live installs. You can try before you buy without modifying your Windows machine at all. So I would give that a shot. If it does not boot up, then there are other versions of Linux designed for 32-bit hardware. It's just that a lot of the hardware, you know, Intel's been making 64-bit chips for a long time. But it may be that is pretty old. It's a compact, which makes me even more nervous. It's a pretty old machine. So then you might want to try something called Xubuntu. And you can get that at xubuntu.org, Xubuntu, and it is a lightweight version of Linux designed for much older machines. And so they'll have a 32-bit version there. But I would just see. This is unfortunately the way the world is, that, hardware ages and operating systems move on, and so it may well be. How much RAM does that computer have? Do you know?
It's two gigs of RAM.
Yeah, you don't want to try to run Pop OS on it. I apologize.
Okay.
It really is pretty lightweight. I would look at Xubuntu, which is designed to be a fairly lightweight. And if that doesn't work, there are even smaller versions of Linux, like Puppy Linux, which will run on really old, slow. Mostly the problem is going to be low memory, I think. Two gigs of RAM was a lot in those days, not a lot these days.
Uh-huh.
So
maybe four, actually, now that I think about
four would be enough. Four would be. Let's go with Xubuntu or Puppy Linux. Puppy Linux is really tiny and fast and runs very well on older hardware.
Okay, so you recommend going to Puppy Linux.
Yeah, try Puppy Linux, except puppylinux.com.
Okay, .com. Okay, do you have or can you recommend some place that would give me a step-by-step?
Yeah, they'll walk you through it. They will. One of the best things about Linux is it's a community-driven operation. Sometimes, I have to admit, some of the people that do this, they're all, super geeks, and they forget how to talk to normal people. So sometimes it's a little turgid, the technical prose. But Puppy Linux is really aimed at normal people. So I think you'll probably find a pretty easy how to install on the Puppy Linux site. And they have 32-bit for BIOS machines, which is what you have.
Right.
And I think that that's exactly what you should probably be using.
Good. And turn off that secure boot also?
You won't have secure boot on that machine. That's a more recent development.
Oh, okay. So I don't even have to look for that.
Right? I don't think so. Yeah, try it and see. Yeah.
All righty. And I'm going to do the same kind of thing, though. I can download it to a...
USB key. As long as your machine will boot from a USB key. It's so old, it may not. Does it have a CD-ROM?
Is there a simple way to check that?
Yeah, just go into the setup and see if you can change the boot order and start boot from a USB device. Is there a CD-ROM on that thing?
Yes.
Yeah. So you may have to make a CD and boot from that. But there'll be instructions. Any Linux will have instructions on how to do that as well.
Okay. All right. Good. So let me get to my second
sure.
even more pressing kind of problem.
Sure.
I have an LG smartphone that I only connect to Wi-Fi. And, you know, I don't have a SIM card in it. I got it just because I got it free from AT&T, and I figured, okay, it's a good backup to my...
Yeah, you play music on it. Yeah.
I can easily switch to.
Yeah.
And it worked great for the first 4 or 5 months. Now, all of a sudden, I get a message that there's no internet available. Now, I'm using Wi-Fi. It shows that I'm connected to both 5G and to 2G. In the settings, it says it's connected. No question about it. And I've checked it with both LG customer service.
So it was working, and all of a sudden, just one day, it says no Wi-Fi.
Right. Now, it worked yesterday and the day before, right? Perfectly, no problem. And now today again... it won't work. It says there's no, comes up unavailable, internet unavailable.
Do you turn the phone all the way off and on again? Shut it all the way down? Not just off, turn off the screen, but turn it all the way off.
All the way off.
Yeah.
3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
I've reset the network settings. I've gone on and done Wi-Fi off and on.
It could be the hardware failed. Could be just the Wi-Fi radio and that thing stopped working.
Okay.
These things happen. Yeah, it sounds like you've done everything. There's one more thing you can do if you don't have anything that you can't afford to lose on that phone is reset it completely. You could do that from the settings. It says backup and reset, and you go there, and you can just completely wipe it and start over, see if that fixes it.
That was the last
bit. Yeah, the last resort. That is. That's the. Then and by the way, customer service will always make you do that because they don't know what you got on there.
They don't care. They don't care what you have or what you want.
Yeah.
Is there a simple way to clone the whole phone with all the apps and everything that would make it easy for me to
restore it? Yeah.
Restore it, yes.
There are third-party apps that you can back up your Android phone with. It used to be Titanium was the one I used, but I can't remember if you had to root the phone or not. So I'm not sure. But if you go to the Android store and look for backup, you'll be able to find something. What you want is something that will back up to the cloud. Generally, what I say is you're already logged into Google, and it will just restore from Google. But if you can't get online, that's not going to do anything.
That's exactly right. I can't back up.
Yeah. So no. I don't know what – people are saying, and I think you're probably right, does the Wi-Fi work for other devices in the house? Everything else is working. So it's not the rebooting the router wouldn't help. Your Wi-Fi is fine. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. It could be, really, that the phone just decided that to take that very moment to stop working, the Wi-Fi.
Okay.
That's a separate part. And, you know, failure happens in the technology business. Hey, good luck with that Linux. I hope you have fun with it.
Thank you. Hopefully I will.
It's good for people who have some time. You're not in a hurry. You just want to mess with it.
That's it. No problem.
Yeah.
But I may call you back to hold my hand.
I'm sure you will. I look forward to it. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks.
Take care. Leo Laporte. I bet I'll hear from him again. What do you think? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't mind. I like it. I got nothing else. I got nowhere else to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm so glad you could make it today. 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number if you want to. Talk tech. Let's do it. Let's do it. Line 4, Gary, Buffalo, New York. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
A couple of quick things. We talked a few weeks ago about the Owlcam.
And I went out and got a Nexbase cam after looking at Wirecutter, as you advised. And the Nexbase cam works fine, but then I discovered the Owlcam is still working as a just a regular car cam.
Yeah, I wonder how long that is. You're not the only one who's told me this.
Oh, it's not the LTE. It just works. In fact, I went on the website and checked it, and I remembered this when I bought it. If you don't pay, it works as a regular cam.
So it records to local storage. Is that right?
Yeah, download it. Yeah, you download it the same way you do with the Nexbase. You download it onto your
right.
Now, the Nexbase does have an SD card you could take out if you want.
So the Owlcam doesn't have an SD card, but it has internal storage?
Yes. Yep. It has internal storage.
Okay. How much does it have? Is it enough to record all day?
It said like 12 hours.
Okay. So, yeah, and then I remember there was a setting where, you know, as you start to use up memory, erase, you know, it's kind of a rotating 12 hours, which is enough, right? Yeah. All you need is what happened on this last trip. Well, I'm going to have to put it back in the car and see if I can get that working. I was a little put off by the support for consumer Owlcam subscribers and new Owlcam purchases is temporarily suspended because it was my impression that most of what Owlcam did was server-based. And if they shut down that server, things like somebody breaks into your car, Owlcam uploads images of it. If you have an accident, it uploads. Even if you don't say the keyword, it will upload stuff. And, of course, that's not going to still happen. But it is going to keep it on the camera. If it gets stolen, well, there's no recourse because you won't have any images of that. But that's true of every other one, right?
The Nexbase, The only thing with the Owlcam is that it is connected to that the OBDI port, so it's...
Right, the OBD2 port, yeah. I like that, though, because it meant it was powered even when the car wasn't on.
Yep. Yeah, and the Nexbase has a battery in it that tries to do the same thing. I don't know how long it's good for.
Yeah. Let me see if I can get a hold of this Zergo company that bought them and find out, if I can, what exactly bits of the Owlcam will continue to work. Go ahead.
The other thing I had asked you about was a software green screen program, and I did find, I think you mentioned it, XSplit. I found it. I tried it. Works great.
Good.
Very happy with it. In fact, I use it with DroidCam.
Nice.
And it, you know, it lets me do green screening software. I do have a green screen anyways, but it's it works really nice.
And what are you using it for? Are you using it for your Zoom conversations or?
No, well, I do use it for Zoom conversation because it works better than the Zoom background.
The Zoom background's terrible, yeah.
Yeah, it works really good for that. I use it for, and here in New York State, we have you got even worse in California, an unemployment applicant problem, and I volunteered through the State Bar Association to represent pro bono people.
Oh, that's great. So you're an attorney, Gary.
Yeah, I'm an attorney who's out of work because I do just tax work, and the tax court shut down, and the
There's nothing to do
but pro bono.
Well, good for you, though. That's great. So you're helping people get their benefits. That's fantastic.
And one last thing on the test, the antibody test. The second daughter had to get one because she's pregnant, expecting in June.
Yikes!
She was sick, and they gave her one, and she was positive, so she's happy that she's over that.
Yeah.
And then my doctor sent me for one because I had been in contact with her, and I was negative, unfortunately.
So you didn't get it from her. Isn't that interesting?
No.
Yeah.
It was free. As long as you got the Blue Cross Blue Shield, as long as your doctor prescribed it, it didn't cost anything.
That's the trick, right? Getting the doctor to prescribe it.
Well, it was easy when I told him what happened. He said, yeah, fine.
No, he should. There's a Quest, which is a national lab, and you can go in and get your own tests. You don't have to get a doctor's prescription. We have one down the road here, and they're offering it. It's not cheap. It's $130. But since my wife is sure she had it in January because she was very sick for a month, she's going to get it. And my son, who came back from Asia and got sick almost immediately, he should get it. He's 25. If he got it, COVID, it was very mild. But again, as Dr. Mom and others have pointed out to me, even if you have the antibodies, you shouldn't assume that you can't get it again. So
her doctor told her, gave her a long.
What's the benefit?
It's information, but it's not.
It's information. And it actually helps public health authorities to kind of understand the spread. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, well, I'm glad your daughter, that's exciting that she's having a baby. The good news is babies usually, as far as I know, never get it, right? They don't get it from their moms.
No, well, yeah. It's her third, so the younger ones.
Yeah.
The two younger ones probably had it, too. And her husband probably had it.
So was she really sick?
Yeah, you know, she lost taste of sense and smell for one day, had a fever, had a cough one day, and that was it.
Isn't that funny? There are so many mysteries. And one of them, the big one is, why do some people die and some people not?
Oh, I know.
Some people don't even show symptoms. Your daughter's very lucky. My son was like a bad cold, but we couldn't figure out where he would have gotten it from because he'd been quarantined for 8 or 9 days when he got it. So I thought, you know, maybe it is. Anyway, he's going to get the test with me tomorrow. We're going to all go down and see.
Well, see good. Hopefully, it's one time you want to be positive.
Yes. Yes. Although I'm still going to wear my masks and social distance because I don't want to get it. Man, that's the one thing. I just don't want to get it. I do not want to get it.
Yeah, well, we're of that age that.
That's right. It's not.
They're vulnerable. I'm 67.
Yep. It's a big, big, big risk. So I'm glad you, I'm sad you didn't have it.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you didn't get it. So I don't know. We need a whole new vocabulary for this world we live in these days. I hope you stay healthy, and I'm glad you called.
I will. Thank you, Leo.
Sure, Gary. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. If the show's almost over, half an hour left. But if you like geeking out, you like talking tech, I keep doing it all week long. We have a podcast network called TWIT, This Week in Tech, at twit.tv. And there's shows about every possible, every conceivable technology subject. And we've got them all there. They're free. Download them anywhere. Listen anytime. twit.tv. I'll see you there. Richard in Centerville, Ohio. Hello, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon.
I'm just wondering if you might be able to help me spend some money.
Oh, I'd love to. Always a pleasure. What are you looking for?
Well, I want to upgrade my Mac Mini to an iMac.
Nice.
And I want to get the biggest bang for the buck. And I'm trying to decide between the 21.5.
I'd get the bigger screen if I were you.
Well, I don't want to go that kind of money.
It's too expensive, yeah. This is the problem with Macs, of course, that they're a premium-priced product. And
kind of a display right now anyway.
Well, I wonder if you shouldn't just get a new Mac Mini. How old is your Mac Mini, and why do you want to get a new one?
It is, I think it's from 2014.
Okay.
Slow as can be.
Yeah.
If I try and run the development tools along with a video at the same time, trying to switch between, it's just dog slow. I can't.
So you're a coder. You write in computer software.
Well, I'm trying to learn.
Good. One thing that Apple did do this year, well, I guess it was late last year, they did a big upgrade on the Mini, and they actually made it a very compelling product. The reason I think you might want to look at it is it's less expensive because you already have the screen, keyboard, and mouse. All an iMac does is put that all together. And honestly, you can get now, you know, a 6-core i7 Mac Mini with a nice SSD. You can get a lot of memory in that thing. And the Mini now has a lot of connections at the back. So if you need more storage, getting a Thunderbolt drive, external drive, will save you money over getting the Apple installed internal drive. I think a Mac Mini might be the way to go. They're pretty much comparable to the iMacs, especially if you're getting a 21-inch iMac.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at having a dual-screen processor.
Ah, yes. I do that with my iMac. Yeah, that's nice.
Video running on one and...
Yep.
Well,
you certainly could do that. In fact, for learning coding, that's really good. I do exactly the same thing. I have my main screen with the software that I'm writing and the coding tools there. And then off on my left, I actually have a 3-screen set up on my iMac. On the left, I'll have the video with the instructor and the things that I'm watching. And that works quite nicely. So that is a good way to do it. If you want dual screens, let me look at what – I haven't really looked at the specs for the 21-inch lately. Let me look at it.
I'm trying to trying to decide what's the benefit between the a 3-core, a 5-core, 7-core, or 8-core, whatever they offer.
Yeah, that's the, so really there's only two ways to do it on the 21 inches, a dual core or a quad core. There's the i5 and the i3. I would not get an i3 because, well, but boy, that looks like, I'm looking at the 21 inches. Yeah, get an i5. For sure get the i5.
They've got an i7 also if you go to the next.
I don't think you need, yeah, if you select it. I don't think you need the i7, to be honest with you. I'd say to save money, you're going to save $200 by getting the i5. I would put that $200 towards more memory. So for the same price as getting an i7, you can have 16 gigs of RAM. I would do that.
Well, I'm not going to do anything less than 16.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't need – it comes with a Radeon Pro. You don't need the Vega. That's a big jump up. I wouldn't worry about that. Now, the one thing I really don't like that Apple still does is those Fusion drives. This is a way of saving money because they put a – don't do that. It's a small SSD and then a big spinning drive. And the Fusion is – it looks like the same drive to the computer. And in theory, they move the stuff you access a lot to the fast drive, the other stuff to the slow drive. The theory does not match the practice. A Fusion drive is only slightly small, faster than a spinning drive. Even if you have to get a 256 gig SSD, I would get a solid state drive for your system.
I think we're going to do the terabyte for the SSD.
Nice. Just remember, you have Thunderbolt, and that means you can connect an external drive that's just as fast as the internal drive. And so you can down the road get a faster drive, but it's that one's up to you. I would say get the i5 because you're going to the i3 is really quite limited. The i5 they're offering is 6 cores. That's a lot of processor cores. Let me talk a little bit about that because this is – Intel ran up against a wall with clock speed. They've now gotten a little bit farther, but for a long time, they could not get to 4 gigahertz. And so instead of trying to get faster clock speed, that's for the longest time, that's what made a processor faster effectively was, you know, it would go from – The original IBM PC, which was 4.77 megahertz, then they got 10 megahertz, then they got to gigahertz. But they, for some reason, they hit a wall at 4 gigahertz. So what they would do is they put multiple processors in, multiple cores, one chip with 2 or 4 or more processors. But that only benefits you if you're using software that uses the multiple processors. And most software does not. Clock speed ultimately is more important for most applications that they'll run faster, particularly games. Now, you're running video at the same time as you're coding. What are you using Xcode, Apple's programming environment?
Yes.
So that will multi-thread. That will use the extra processors. So that should make a difference for that particular use. If you're using Photoshop or you're doing video editing, those are a few of the programs that will use multiple cores. But a multi-core processor often is slower for single core tasks. So don't get all caught up in, oh, I got to have 8 cores, 10 cores, 20 cores. For most use, you won't see the difference. So 6 cores is more than enough. And you'll notice that the i7 is running at 3.2 gigahertz. But really what's important is the size of the L2 cache. And so and they don't really reveal that information. But more L2 cache will make a bigger difference than megahertz. And the least important is the number of cores. It's good to have dual or quad cores. 6 is more than enough to do what you want to do. You could compile on Xcode in the background while you're doing other things. It'll run just fine. So I think you're good. You don't need a fancy video card unless you're doing Photoshop or, gaming or something like that. I think that the... Yeah, this is, the only thing I'm not happy with is 21 inches. I haven't used a 21-inch display in a long time, but you've got your 27-inch cinema still, right?
Yes.
So that's what you're going to use as your main display, and the 21 inches will have the video on it. That's probably okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as you have another bigger display, I think you're golden. That's, by the way, what we just spec'd out for you, $2,000, which is absurd. Actually, it's even more if you're going to get the terabyte. Now you're up to $2,549. You're paying the Apple premium, beautiful gear, really gorgeous, And I like Mac OS, but boy, that is a steep premium. That's a 50% premium at least.
Well, but see, in 1981, when I bought my Apple II Plus with 64K dual copy, NFC, green phosphorus,
$8,000, right?
100 printer, a wide carriage printer, it came to about $4,500.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh, you're going to love this computer. It's a beautiful computer. I would say i5, not i7. And I would say, and you're right on there, 16 gigs is perfect. You don't need more. And if you can afford a terabyte, go for it. So that's a nice amount of storage to have. It's very fast. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Glad to spend your money. I think you're going to love it. I don't want to talk you out of it. I think you're going to love it. It's beautiful. And you're right. I mean, you know, it's an Apple and it's a...
I've got a desk that in 2012 I took a picture with my Apple II Plus.
Wow.
Running with the Apple Broderbund game running on it.
Oh my gosh, Load Runner or something like that. Oh, how fun!
Yes, with my iPad next to my Apple or my Mac ProBook.
Okay, so you bleed six colors. You're definitely an Apple guy.
Yeah, with a cinema display on it.
So, nice. Yeah. If you didn't have the cinema display, I'd say don't get the 21, but you do. So I think that that's actually fine. It's a decent processor. It's a nicely set up machine. Yeah.
I want to be able to have the development tools running on one screen.
That's right.
And be able to do the videos and see the examples on the other screen.
That's right.
The way I'm doing it now, I have to sort of...
It's hard. Yeah.
I run something on my iPad while it's laying down and...
And you want to be able to cut and paste too. So you really do want everything on one computer.
Yeah, and the Mac Mini trying to do that is just horrendously slow.
I think I bless this purchase. And what are you learning? Are you learning Swift?
Yeah. I've had Swift for quite some time now, and obviously with a lot of extra time.
It's a good time to do it. It's a beautiful, beautiful. Programming language. It's just gorgeous. And Xcode is just really great to work with. You're going to write iOS apps or desktop?
Oh, I'm playing right now.
Yeah. It's my hobby. I love coding. It's so much fun.
At 73, it's something to...
Yeah, keeps your mind going. Yeah. Better than crosswords. I love it. Yeah, and I do the same thing. I have the videos on my one screen, and I can and the courseware there, and I can cut and paste, and I have the programming environment on the other screen. That's actually a very good way to go. Yeah, I think you'll be very happy.
I hadn't even thought about the cut and paste, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, if the courseware has something you want to cut and paste, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's nice to have it all in one machine.
All righty. Well, I appreciate
your
time.
Nice to talk to you.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah, enjoy Swift.
We will.
You're going to have fun. Thanks, Richard. Take care. Thank you to Lady Laura, our musical director. Thank you to Kim Schaffer, our phone angel. Thank you for letting me be myself, a geek, a big fat geek on the radio. I'm so glad you listened. Keep listening. We'll be back next weekend answering questions, talking tech. I keep worrying that we're going to run out of things to talk about. You know, the tech industry's kind of slowed down. Everything's slowed down during this COVID pause we're in. But fortunately, there's still tough stuff to talk about, isn't there? Yes, there is. The website during the week is techguylabs.com. And as I mentioned, our podcasts go on all week long, and so does our chat room, irc.twit.tv. And if you get a little lonely, if you want a little geeky companionship, they're there 24/7 chatting away. People all over the world. Our Australian group was in there overnight. And so there's always somebody there. irc.twit.tv. It's family-friendly and a great place to hang your hat. Don on the line from Dana Point, California. Hi, Don.
Hi. I have several questions. I want to create archival Outlook folders in an external drive. Is there any issue in maintaining usable access to those?
Not at all. Yeah, in fact, Outlook is very good at that. You've already probably investigated the archive feature of Outlook. You create a PST file. That's the standard Outlook file, and you can create it anywhere. You can say, I want this folder or these folders in an archival PST file. And then it's very easy with Outlook to open that PST file, examine it, treat it as if it were a live inbox. But, of course, it's
okay. Are you familiar with upgrade to color categories?
No. Is this a new feature of Outlook?
To the email folder and go to properties.
Yeah.
And it will give you the option to upgrade to color categories, which gives what we've always missed since 2010, namely colored flags and labels.
Very nice. Yeah, I don't use Outlook, so I'm not really kept up with all of the features. But that is a very handy thing to have, because then you can quickly see, you know, stuff I need to work on, that kind of thing.
I just discovered that. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
I use a promote control, and I with a Canon Mark II, use a seven shot burst, and I want to find out which way is best. Using the promote, I can do both focus stacking and exposure stacking in the same shot. My question is I've experimented and I can't see any difference in the outcome. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Huh. Well, you understand the idea, and I have. So you have the Canon remote that's an external, and you plug it into the top of the camera there.
Yes, it's that, an one.
Yeah.
$300 item.
Yeah, I have it. I have it too. I rarely use it. Mostly, I got it for time lapse. I wanted it because it will automatically do time lapse shots as well.
I find it invaluable in doing that.
You bet. So the focus stacking, in theory, it will defocus as it shoots those seven or eight or whatever shots. It will change the focus point from closest to farthest, and then you can pick the shot that you like. It's exactly the same shot. The only difference is which part of the shot is in focus. Same thing with exposure stacking. That would be more useful for making HDRs, for instance, because you're going to have a range of exposures with a half stop or a stop in between them. If you wanted to do a high dynamic range photo, you could use Photoshop or some other tool to take all the shots and then mix them appropriately so that you got a beautiful shot that even the dark parts are visible and the light parts are visible. That's more what that would be for. I think the focus stacking is just so you could choose. You can go back and say, oh, yeah, I should have focused on that.
Well, for landscape, it's
oh, sure.
Really
yeah.
Valuable.
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, okay. Are notes available for the continued conversations during the commercial breaks?
I think James writes those down. Yeah, you heard that, because when you're on hold, you hear everything. And often I'll extend a conversation beyond the commercial breaks. I have to break. I can't help that. But I haven't finished answering the question. So often I'll do that. Those appear on the podcast version of the show. So the podcast usually has some extra content, the stuff in the breaks. Sometimes it's just me eating lunch. And James, I'm assuming, James, you're writing those down because it is part of the podcast. So I presume all of those will be in the notes at techguylabs.com.
Question.
Yes.
Our church uses two video cameras to let to do the online sermons right now.
Nice.
And there's no way to let the speaker know which camera is active.
Yes. Tally lights. Yeah.
Is there any way to add those to a regular video camera?
What are you using to switch back and forth?
I don't know.
So I'll give you an example. I can do tally lights. We don't use tally lights here in our studios because I don't want our presenters to be looking at the camera. So that's my job. But you're right. If somebody's given a sermon, it's nice to address the camera. So one of the things I use is from Blackmagic Design. It's called their ATEM Mini. It's a $200, $300, I guess, switcher. It has the circuitry built in. If you're using Blackmagic cameras, so if it's an entire system, to do the tally lights. So as you switch on the ATEM, the Blackmagic camera will light up when it's on. But that it requires that kind of integration between the switcher, the cameras, and the software. And I'm guessing most churches, you just cobbled something together, especially now, if they didn't stream before. They just cobbled something together, and I would guess they don't have that capability. In fact, their cameras may not even have tally lights.
Right. That's why I was hoping there's some way to add them.
Well, possibly you could have a light that turns on, but it requires whatever their switcher is has to know about it and be able to control it.
And okay.
You see what I'm saying? Because the switcher knows which camera's on. That's the only thing. The camera doesn't know. The switcher knows.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's great to talk to you. Yeah. And in the chat room, and we'll put this in the show notes, Scooter X has found some wireless tally lights from Qubi, Qubi.com. There's also tally-lights.com. Thank you, James DeRuvo. And James, you write down the stuff, do you, in between, during the commercials? I'm sure you do. You put those in the show notes as well at techguylabs.com. Let's see if I can get Ken in here real quickly because we're almost out of time. Hi, Ken.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Leo. I have a HAL 9000 problem.
Okay.
And my computer's trying to kill me.
I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that.
Yeah. and please encourage Kim to watch 2001.
She didn't know what you were talking about.
I know. So here's my
young
problem.
People.
I have recovered and reinstalled Windows 10 on an old Dell Inspiron laptop.
Yep.
It's not functional. It's running so slowly. So what I'm trying to do is install the current Zubuntu and from a flash drive. And no matter what I do in the BIOS or trying to change the boot order, it will not boot. It will not boot from the USB.
My guess.
I can't get rid of the Windows 10.
Oh, it won't start up. Yeah. So make sure you made the USB key in a UEFI format so that your boot system can see it. And I think that's probably the trick here. If your system can boot to USB, it needs to know that's a real operating system. And in most modern Windows systems, including that Inspiron, I believe, it has to be UEFI. Whew, out of time, but I am not out of calls. So I'll tell you what, let's get back together and do it all again next week. Have a great, safe Geek Week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.